BJC.
KB4CBA.
How are you doing today? I know you're, I guess you're headed out, aren't you?
I was in kind of a dead zone there on White Hampton. I'm in that noisy stretch.
I know what you're talking about. One day just off concrete, too, is same way. It's just like being in. I've been in a cage or something.
Well, I don't know why it's so noisy right there, unless it might have something to do with Paris Mountain and a big chunk of dirt.
I think there's some pager stuff in there, David. I'm not sure, but I think I looked online and saw some pager stuff in that area, but I may be wrong. Maybe a lot of them still have the old stuff we don't have, and it's still... Got old paging systems that people are using. Sometimes that interferes, but I don't know if that's the case anymore. I know at one time it was.
Yes, in public, east. And usually it gets a little better up here, but who knows what today may bring. Well, gas is 2:46 at Paris Point. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Pay 2:41 at Sam's the other day. Sam's is always a little bit cheaper. Not me. She's about 3 or 4 cents or maybe a nickel cheaper than other people are most of the time, but not all the time. Of course, they're like quick to the cash is. Cash and credit, or they don't use cash, it's just credit on there, debit. It's all the same price there, so you don't get a discount for cash like some of the other places offer.
Some places are a little misleading, I think, sometimes, because they have that, cash thing, but you got to have a telescope to see it.
That's the cash price, and mice print below it, it'll say cash only, and credits X amount higher. I know one time when Sam's first started doing fuel at their location here, if you use a Discover card, you get an extra 5% off transactions, and now it's just 1%, but at one time they did that, but they don't do it anymore. They had a Sam's, you could either use a Sam's card or Discover. You couldn't use any of the card now. They accept all of them, but I think they give a discount for the Sam's credit card. But I've already got a Visa and a Discover. I don't need no more credit cards.
Yeah, well, I don't make a ton of purchases. My wife buys a lot of our stuff either from Amazon or gets a big enough delivery from Walmart that it's free, so we don't really have to worry too much about that. And every now and then I'll walk in a store, but I like going in some stores like Ace Hardware. I was in there yesterday. That's always a fun place to go, or Home Depot or Lowe's, either one of those. My goodness, what are they doing here on Rutherford Road? Got the cones up. A lot of guys lost their job at the county, and I don't know if you heard about that, in Road and Bridges.
He didn't log back then. I forgot. I hadn't seen him in about a week. He works for the county council. I think I did see that, but I'm not sure if I know the details on it or not. I know they weren't particularly happy about it.
All the details. Because when I worked for the county in the vehicle service center, we didn't work on the heavy equipment, but we'd go over there and talk to the guys, and they'd come over and talk to us. It's because they found a shovel that could stand up by itself.
The county guys down here came down to repaint my apron on my driveway, and they brought all that heavy equipment down there, and there was about six or seven of them, and the only one to do any work was the guy running the was the guy throwing out the asphalt, the guy running the little roller thing. Everybody else was standing around watching.
Jeez, not enough Indians. But I guess I shouldn't say that, because I guess that is a racial remark. So I guess I better take that one back. Sorry about that. But anyway, you could get away with that in the 60s, but not today. Oh, me. Yeah, we used to have some jokes. When I first started working there, I worked on the police cars and ambulances, and first day, they handcuffed me to the parts counter. Had a metal grate up there, you know, and they handcuffed me to the grate, and I didn't have a key. And so finally, after a few minutes, one of the guys came by and put a key in my hand. He said, "Here you go." He said, "I've been right where you are."
Right there, one of my wife's first cousin married a guy. He might have worked in the prison system, went to the county prison system one time. They had all kinds of jokes about what people did and that sort of thing. I said, it's kind of comical. But the last place I'd want to be would be in a prison, either inside or outside. I know when I was calling on, a lot of prisons have to make their own material cloth and that sort of thing. And I was in a prison in Texas, had to go inside, had a 50-foot wall around that thing, maybe let it drop. 50-foot-high wall around that thing, they got like a barrier between that and the fence, and they had guys up there with guns. They might have machine guns, but they were up there, and in order for me to get in, they had to put my driver's license in a little bag, and it went on a pulley up to the guard there at the gate, and they let me in, and then you couldn't wear a watch inside. You couldn't carry anything else with you. And after I got in there, they were making terry cloths like towels in there. None of the prisoners having their shirts on because they didn't have any air conditioning inside. And most of the guys that work in the managers that handle those things were most of them out of Carolinas, because that's where most of the takes were been made over the last 100 years. He said, "Yeah, the only thing about this place is if they have something goes on," he said, "you're locked in along with the rest of us." I said, "Oh, no." And I said, and the next time I went in one, I said, "Now, this was a minimum security one." But, David, they had all the prisoners doing all the work out at the, on the farms, and they're raising vegetables. And what they would do is they'd sell everything and all the prime parts of the chicken, for instance, or prime vegetables off, and then use the rest of it to feed the prisoners. And they'd make them shoes there, they made patches, like law enforcement patches on these embroidery machines for people all over the United States. And he said, "Yeah, we're self-sufficient here." And I said, "Well," I said, "I just don't let me get locked in here. For God's sakes, you don't have to get a bathroom in there, because all the everything's out in the open there. There ain't no privacy at all." And I said, that may be real quick that I ain't gonna be committing no crime of any kind.
KB4CPA. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I've never been in a maximum security prison. I've just been to the jail at County Square, and I've seen, I think it was the same guy, two different times, and I went in to see him, but I was behind two steel doors, and there was no way for me to get out. I mean, if I just wanted to get up and walk out, I was at their mercy, so, but that guy, I'll never forget, because he told me, he said, "I'm coming back to church when I get out of here," so he finally got out, and I never saw him. So there you go. Well, I'm sitting in the driveway here, so I'm going to pull in the garage and set this thing down. How in trouble I can get into here. I think my daughter, my grandson, want to play pickleball or something. I just finished some tennis, so we'll see. But anyway, good to talk with you in 73s. I'll clear out of here after your final. Always a pleasure. KB4CPA.
And they should have kept him, Jerry.
I know that, Tom. We'll talk to you later, David. KB4CBA and 4DJC, along with N0TR in the comments section.
That's one, Tom.
Well, you had two this morning, so we ain't even yet. So watch your back, Dave. This is N0TR. Go ahead, Jerry.
I'll get out my bread. I'm 45.
You can't eat. Hey, Jerry.
How you doing?
This morning, a couple times. I left myself wide open. Oh, good to hear you, Jerry. I just come in and get in the mail in the Mount a hill of beans, I should say. And I don't see what the saying is. There's more chiefs than there is Indians being racist. I like that saying.
Teach you that stuff. Some people look clean and correct anyway, Tom. All the people I work with up in Rock Hill, all the Catawbas out, call themselves Indians. I never heard them call themselves anything else, but that's been a long time ago. So, what's been going on with y'all? How's your chickens doing?
Call me anything you want except late for supper. Surgery I was looking this morning that I gotta have later this month. 211 minutes. That's a long one.
You getting work done? They won't go in there and dig anything out of what's going on.
Well, kidney stones. One of them's over an inch and 2,300ths, so might as well say an inch and a quarter. If they're over that big, they can't go in the traditional way, Jerry, so they go in through your back, and then they use a laser and crush them up and suck them out of you, and then they put a bigger shunt in you for a couple of weeks, and I guess that's so you can pass the remainder of the stones. I don't know, but Jiminy, that's a long surgery. That's about like open heart surgery.
I've seen them. You know, my mother-in-law had one of her kidneys removed. She found out she had kidney cancer, and she lived 14 years after they found it. And they went to her adrenal gland, and that's what finally, you know, she lived about 10 years after that. But the doctor, when he took out the kidneys, the idea is saw the adrenal gland and didn't think she could be under that long. She left it in. If he'd taken it out, it might have not spread, but. Regardless, I've seen them going. I've heard of them going through the back like that. And I know they either put a stent or not, or a shunt. They either put something that'll let the rest of that stuff get out of there. I know the doctor did my surgery, my hold up surgery. He does that same thing, but he does it, you know, transurethrally. and disintegrates and takes it out that way rather than you doing surgery. But that's a pretty good size stone. I think I've got one, but mine's not moving around or anything, and it's mine's probably about 6 millimeters, maybe, or something like that. Maybe that'd be
6 millimeters without me figuring it out.
Probably about that's about a quarter of an inch,
maybe, compared to what I got. And yeah, they put a tube in back there, and then they go in through that tube and break it up. But that's 3.5 hours, and I got to go in before that, and they do some kind of radiology and mark it, and I think that lasts an hour under anesthetic that morning. So it's a long time for an old guy like me, especially with heart failure.
Time they did something, I guess they didn't. Must be some type of, you know, like an MRI guided type thing. I'm not sure how that. I'm not that familiar with it, because in my both the guys, I guess they both them do, you know, do kidney work, but I don't know about that. I just know the guy that did my laser surgery, that's what he does. You know, he does them uses laser, and they don't use that. I don't think they recommend using those. I know my first cousin had that where he put them in ultrasonic bath or something. Yeah, I don't think they do that anymore, because I don't think it does a very good job of breaking them up like the laser does.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jerry. They don't. They just put you in a big bathtub and do them. I've never had one. Never had a kidney stone. And then all at once, he said, we're going to do pathology on it and see what's causing it. Because he said, when they did a CT on me, or an echo, I can't remember which one. He said, they just weren't there, and then all at once they are. But it must not be in too much of a hurry. That was last December, and they're just now getting around to it.
Different on a CT than it does on a CAT scan, I think. On one of them, it lights up, you know, it kind of lights up a little bit, but then on the other one, it just looks like a dark spot. I think the MRI just looked like a dark spot on there, because I thought that was something else. It's not the same stone has been there. It's just not moving around. And evidently, they didn't think it was serious enough to get in and try to remove it yet. It had not increased in size in a year or so. And same thing on my pancreas. They said everything was stable on that now, so I'll go back in December and get another MRI. I'm getting my MRI done this time in Powderville. It's a little closer, just to check out to see how stable they are. But the pancreas doctor said, he said, really, it's like hitting a home run. He said, you have the type that don't use it as they can, but they don't usually develop into anything. He said, but if it does, he said, it's in a location where I can get in and get that out. What happened to, that serious whiffle, I think called a whiffle or something like that. Surgery, and it's real nasty when they get in and do that. I know my wife's first cousin's husband, he's having this. He's looking at radiation for his prostate, but then I told him, I said, I think I'd look at surgery before I'd look at radiation. I think, both the guys told me, they said, you do surgery first and radiation later, because once you do radiation, it's real difficult to do surgery. I'm not sure why that's the case, but there's something about that that makes it difficult for them to do one.
Mr. Gerald Chiar. Yeah, my doctor said that there can be complications. They're not uncommon. And the other surgery, of course, they won't do it on you after you're 72 years old, where they take it out. So, anyways, I was talking to a friend on the radio the other night, and he'd had that radiation done, and it did burn his bladder, and now he says every time I walk down the hall, I slosh like a gallon of milk or something, you know. And so he's got a permanent bag on him. I had another friend up in Kansas that had 52 radiation treatments, and his PSA now is 0.2, Jerry, and no more cancer. And that was done in a little bitty town up there, which is surprising. But yeah, that was a CT scan, the last one I had done, and he showed it to me and Bernice. And it looked like big white chunks right in the middle of my left kidney.
I did the MRI. One of them, it looks like a highlight. The other one, it just looks like dark. It's like it just looks black looking where the stones are. It's really weird looking. I mean, once you know how to read them, though, it's pretty easy to see where they are and what they are. But it also has something to do with where it's located. Because I only have one. I've got basically one full-size kidney and one. The other one's smaller, much, much smaller. So, and it's also got to do with the location, too, Tom. I think, some of them are a little harder to get to than the other ones. And that's a little more cautious and requires a different type of surgery. But my daddy had them, I've heard that, depending on what type you have, they say a lot of this, people drink a lot of iced tea may have them because all the iron, there's a lot of iron in tea. And, they say sometimes that one type of stone they may think it may attribute to it. It may not be the whole cause of it, but one type of stone. But anyway, well, when are you having it done?
I have a date, Jerry, but it's towards the end of the month, in the next few weeks. But it's just outpatient, so go in, and they're saying I come out the same day, but doctor said I'd probably have to stay overnight, so my daughter would probably stay with me overnight.
I got you. Let me know. You send me an email or text something. Let me know. Yeah, I stayed overnight, but that sounds like a lot. But being out the same day, that's hopefully, it won't take that long. Sometimes they overestimate these things anyway. They can get in and do a passionate thing to do. I know when Lynn had her heart ablation. They said it was going to take about an hour and a half, or something like that. And she went into the operating room and was out in 54 minutes.
It took to put that shunt in, wasn't it, Bernice? It didn't take very long at all. He said once I get in there, Tom. And this was before they put that stent or shunt. He called it. From the kidney down to the bladder, he says, the procedure really only takes me about 15 minutes. So, the other thing is, I asked him why I have to wait so long since December. The nurse in the office said, Tom, there's only one operating room with that kind of radiological equipment in it. I said, Jesus Christ, they got 34 operating rooms down there. And she says, yes, but that's the only one, so it has to be shared with other urologists. So there you go. You know the rest of the story, like Paul Harvey said, Jerry.
A whole lip surgery at Greer. He's the only one that does it. Unless they got another, he's the only one in the whole prison system that does it. So he stays busy. He'll do 3 or 4 days sometimes when he's operating. But it doesn't take long most time, but maybe 90 minutes or something like that, depending on any complications. And I didn't have any, thank goodness. But, time do they keep that shunt in, or do they remove it later?
Well, he says, no, we put a bigger one in, and then we take it out later in the office. I'm not looking forward to that, Jerry.
That sounds like something for a cystoscope to me. I don't sound real pleasant, but I've had several cystoscopes in, not as bad as everybody says. Mine haven't been anyway, but for me, give me some wild turkey or something, knock me out. I'm gonna be around that while they're doing that. But they just use that just to keep it up so they can get all the sediment and stuff out of there, I guess.
They said it was bigger, but, that might be in thousandths of an inch bigger. Who knows? I'm praying. But they said to take it out in the office. It only takes Well, it's less than a minute. And they say when they go through the prostrate, they tell you to take a deep breath and hold it, and then they go on up and they grab it, and they got a camera and I guess some kind of grabber on. Probably a Chinese finger trap from the carnival, Jerry. Remember those?
Handcuffs. Yeah, I remember those things. Yeah. I had one when I was real young, too, and they did some work on me back when I was about 12, and they weren't as technologically advanced as they are now, and it was quite painful, but the last one I had done wasn't painful at all. I mean, it just, you know, more pressure than anything, but they also didn't pull anything out either. But anyway, I hope everything goes well. Like I said, send me a text, let me know, and we'll be thinking about you, and hope everything goes well. I gotta jump off here right now. I'm gonna go back outside here in a minute, see if I can't work some guys on 20 meters, maybe, if it's not too noisy.
Yeah, I asked him. I was asking the nurse about it, and then the doctor come in and was explaining it, and when he started to go out, he got a hold of the door handle there and started out the back door there, and I said, well, Samantha was just in here, and I said, you really got a nice nurse. Well, he said, well, thank you, and I said, yeah, she ain't nothing like you. He just turned around and shook his finger at me.
A good sense of humor.
Nice, and he's very good. And another friend of mine has the same doctor, and he's a lot smarter than I am, and he said he's a wonderful doctor. And he was a Navy flight surgeon on top of that. But Jerry, I'll let you go. Hey, it's great hearing you, and don't be a stranger, and I'll catch you down the line in 4DJC in 0TR. Hope I got that right, Jerry.
Anytime. Good talking to you. Say hello to Bernice for me, too. And 0TR and 4DJC clear.
No, radio check.
Excuse me. And 0TR. You're fine business, 5x5.
Just listening to your conversation there, and hope things go well for you at work.
That very much. Did you get that email I sent to you the other day, Jim, on the KC-46?
I'll go back and look for it. Is there something good or bad about it?
Well, reports good news, you know that, on anything. I'm being sadistic. Yeah, they're finding cracks. I can't remember where we're at now. You just have to look at it. It was on flight aware.
In the tails in the KC-10, because the tail, you know, on top of that engine would be up there in the wind stream coming off the, if we were flying up as a receiver, the tail rudders would sit there and flutter. And so we had cracks in the main spar and the rudder, and they would have to, you know, drill them out to stop the crack.
Good scenario. Oh, I know over in Vietnam they said they patched the bullet holes with sea ration cans and that at times on the helicopters and planes. But, yeah, the C-5s had a problem like that. And I remember the MD-80 that crashed off of San Diego, and it had a jack that went up, I think, to the elevator. I'm not sure, either that or the rudder. And it went bad, and they made a nosedive out there off of San Diego, if I remember rightly.
That airline's crash, and the company was, they went into any investigation, and they found that they had not been properly servicing the screw jack for the elevator. Hadn't been greasing it right.
Yeah, ball lead screws. I worked in a machine shop 32 years, and they started using those and double ones, and they have to be preventative maintenance on them, that's for sure, Jim. It's too bad that they find some of this stuff after the fact, but I would think some of those inspections they got to do on those planes is incredible, hard to get at, such as commercial jet, I'm trying to think of it now, with the 747, and they had a wiring problem down in the fuel tanks in the center of it, and they sat there on the tarmac too long, and it got hot.
They had problems in the tankers with the same issue. It was a Boeing product, and but anyways, they finally figured it out, and now the way they fixed that is they fill the wings, the fuel tanks, with nitrogen. And so they have a filter that collects the nitrogen, and the oxygen from the air is thrown overboard as a waste product.
That would take care of it real quick, and good idea. But I don't think anybody, you know, when Tesla does these things, it's just that it just happens, and especially as many hours as they put on the aircraft, it's pretty incredible that, you know, they'll last 20 years or more.
To the maintenance programs themselves, I mean, the airplanes would fall apart pretty quick. Just look at the B-52, how long that thing's been flying. But the Air Force spends a lot of time keeping the maintenance up for those periodic maintenance.
You know, every time they pressurize that, to 6,000, 8,000 feet, whatever, they go 8,000, I think is what they used to do. The newer 777 and 787, they bring it down to 6,000. They say it's better for jet lag. But people don't realize it. That aircraft expands and contracts every time they do that. And that's a cycle. And if you stop and think about how many cycles those have, especially the ones like in the United States that are flying these short flights around, like DC-9s, MD-80s, et cetera, et cetera. It's pretty incredible that, you know, it's like taking steel and stress relieving it.
And you blow it up and you release it. And you're right, they retire the aircraft based on number of cycles, not number of landings or number of hours. Just look at the Aloha Airlines, where the top of the airplane came off. The FAA went back and started looking a lot closer at some of the older ones that would do short hops, like, you know, the Aloha Airlines were doing island hops every day. And that was a lot of cycles on the airplane.
Jim, I remember that. You know, I've flown in paragliders before, but that one went there when that happened. I thought, boy, that let the wind out of your sails all right if you were sitting in those seats. And I remember that distinctly. But we took one of those, matter of fact, over to Kona, I think it was, and from the main island. I get mixed up on the islands, but the only ones I truly remember is Hawaii, of course, and Wake, and Midway. And, you know, I was 18, 19 years old then, didn't have sense enough to realize the history in it. I wish I could go back now and see it again, but there's always Google Earth.
Flown by Wake and Midway, but and flown out in and out of Hickam several times, but never got to the more remote islands themselves.
That we landed on was Wake, and then there was a typhoon when we were going over to the Philippines and then on down to Vietnam. But I remember that runway distinctly, and as we were approaching it, I was running radar, but nobody was really monitoring it because we were just transiting the Pacific, and we had like a 200-mile-an-hour headwind or something. Or, wait a minute, our ground speed was 225, and that plane was capable of 320 or 340 knots. And the captain said, hey, Rouse, come up here and look at this. Because the radar was just beyond the radio operator. And I walked up there, he said, you see that on your radar? And I said, no. But the radar was, I didn't have a tilt down on it. I never seen anything so small in my life, Jim. But what I do remember is, my gracious, that's the most gorgeous water you'd ever believe of in your life. But when I stepped off of that plane, I'm telling you, there at Wake, it make you sick. The humidity was so bad. I've never felt humidity like that in my life. And then I think we flew on to Midway, and then we spent the night on Midway in the barracks there, and then went on because we needed to refuel due to that typhoon.
Boss that said, was talking about how big the oceans are. He said, yep, every second airborne is another day's swim.
Yeah, it was, you know, Midway didn't seem to be that way as far as the humidity went. Hawaii was awesome. The kids sent us there on our 40th anniversary, and we didn't have the money to go over on something like that. And they went together, and that was our 40th anniversary present. And, gosh, the weather over there is nice with those, I guess they call them trade winds. I don't know, but...
stationed over there, and so she spent 3 or 4 years enjoying that weather and learned to sail sailboats there, so she misses it quite a bit.
They're saying that there isn't enough infrastructure now to support any more people over there. I heard a year or so ago that they don't think they'll have the water and the sewage and all of that, that it's saturated, basically. Well, I don't either, and even, you know, that would be, tomorrow's Bernice and I's 57th anniversary, so that had been 17 years ago. The traffic was pretty bad then, but I didn't drive in it much, except to go over and ride the helicopters over the volcano. But I remember back then a loaf of bread was $5 over there, so I can't imagine what it'd be now.
Really, that and eggs. There's no telling how much eggs would cost.
One thing, in the Philippines, buddy, you didn't mess around with anybody's chickens there. They were well protected, and they really washed those chickens.
Hey, Tom, I got to run. But hope things go well for your surgery there, and you'll have to let us know how things go.
I appreciate that, and could be a lot worse, and I've been through a lot worse, so as they say, the creek don't rise, you know, I'll do my best. Anyways, you take care, Jim. Nice to hear you. KO4LAO and 0TR73.
Before LAO, 73.